You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, this is Ed Stetzer here on the New Churches Podcast. So the following episode was actually recorded with Clint Clifton before his passing. And if you're not aware of Clint's life ministry and his untimely death, I want to encourage you to listen to the prior episode. We did kind of a memorial episode. But Clint's passion for church planting and developing leaders led him to sharing that wisdom through mentoring, speaking, writing, and podcasting. And we know we actually talked about this, and we were like, well, what would Clint want? And we know he'd want this episode shared with our New Churches audience. So again, if you'd like to honor Clint's legacy, the Clint Clifton Global Church Planting Fund has actually been created in his memory to generously fund church planters and remove barriers to pursuing God's call on their lives. To donate to the Clint Clifton Global Church Planting Fund, visit Pillar Dumfries. Pillar is like the pillar, pillar in a building, and it's Dumfries, Dumfries.com. That's the church that he planted and planted many churches out of. PillarDumfries.com/Clint. That's PillarDumfries.com/Clint. And of course, you can use the link in the show notes as well. So listen to this episode, knowing that our friend finished his earthly race and really wanted to make much of Jesus through church planting, and encourage you. Thanks for listening.
Hey, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. I'm your host, Clint Clifton, and today we've got a tremendously good episode for you. We're going to be talking with Dave Prophet and Colby Garman about discipling new believers, and all of us have this as a task. There's not a church planner or a team member or a church planning spouse who's listening today who does not have the responsibility of discipling new believers. So we're going to go out and share Jesus with people and then help them become fully devoted followers of Christ. So today, Colby, he's the teaching pastor at Pillar Church of Dumfries. That happens to be the church that I planted. And before coming to Pillar, Colby served as an associate pastor at a church nearby. And he's got four sweet girls and a wife. And he, prior to the work at Pillar, he was also with the International Mission Board, serving as a missionary to the nation of Iceland. Colby and Annie have been married. Colby and his wife Annie have been married since 2001. And then we also have Dave Prophet. Dave has been a long-term mentor of mine for years. When I was first church planting, Dave and his son Aaron were planting collegiate churches around the country, but near me in the Virginia area. And I got to, as a brand new church planter, sort of watch them do trial and error and make mistakes from afar about planting a church and then multiplying that church into a family of churches. And really a lot of the inspiration for Pillar and why we became what we did came from watching these guys do what they did at collegiate churches. So Dave, it's such a privilege to have you here. And Colby, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
So we're going to talk about discipling new believers. So Colby, when we think about discipleship, sometimes, you know, it's hard to talk about discipleship and not talk about evangelism because we're often thinking about new believers in both. So how do evangelism and discipleship rightly relate to one another?
Yeah, I think the easy way to understand it is think about Matthew 28 and the instruction from Jesus and the Great Commission. We've created the separate categories of discipleship and evangelism. Jesus simply says that our task is to make disciples. And in doing so, there's a going, which certainly means establishing new relationships and making new disciples in new places. And there's a baptizing and teaching. This means helping them identify deeply with the church and the body, as well as their ongoing maturing and developing. That whole thing is one big umbrella that Jesus calls making disciples. And so evangelism in the beginning really plays that role of helping people understand who Jesus is, understand the gospel, and become disciples, and the continuation of them in their growth, the sanctification process, the renewing process of God's word is the ongoing work of discipleship. And so so they really are exist on a continuum of that Jesus calls making disciples.
Yeah. I remember us early on in our ministry life together, we were young, early 20 somethings, having a conversation about evangelism and discipleship one day, and sort of saying, no, they're really one thing. It's like evangelship. You remember that conversation?
Yeah. We were actually in the Starbucks in Fredericksburg.
Oh, you remember where we were.
Absolutely. I can't remember what we'd done, but it was like you and me and our wives, and we were sitting there and we just sort of coined the idea of evangelship. Now, we've never done anything with it or promoted the idea of evangelship, but we recognized then that the two weren't separated and have always thought that way about it ever since.
Right. A year from now, a book called Evangelship is going to come out, and we're going to know somebody swiped it. Yeah, it's on the open market out there if you want to take it. Yeah. Okay, Dave, tools for discipleship. So let's get, you know, I'm intensely practical. And when I think about discipleship, the question that's coming up all the time for busy pastors and church planters is, what do I do? You know, sometimes we've even had the experience of pastors saying, like, I don't know how to disciple. I maybe wasn't discipled properly myself. And so you served me in an incredible way, which is why I wanted to invite you onto this episode. You wrote a thing called Discipleship Course earlier in your ministry. Can you tell us about Discipleship Course and why you believe in that approach?
Mm-hmm. And of course, that is only like part one of the approach of discipleship. It's the more the academic part. And then there's the activity part. Right, Colby? I mean, you would agree with that. We've got to have the information, but we've got to do the activity as well.
Yeah.
So I'm revitalizing a church in Southwest Riverside County. And I have a counseling center at right outside the Marine base, their camp, there in Oceanside, California. And so we're winning all these like Marines and sailors, corpsmen, Navy corpsmen. I was a Marine myself in Vietnam, a combat Marine. So, you know, I had a really easy connection with these guys. So anyway, I was the director, but the people that were the board of directors, they said, hey, Dave, can you build a discipleship course to help us to disciple all these, because we didn't see them very much after we won them to the Lord, because then they went everywhere, all over the world and all over the country for additional training and things. You know how that goes. You work with Marines. And so so I wrote it like a 19-topic course, and I just started off with, you know, a review of our commitment all the way down to demons and angels, you know, the last one. And, you know, some of them are part one and part two. And I wrote the course actually for U.S. Marines. And then our church picked it up, and they loved it. And the church that I was pastoring and revitalizing there in Southern California, Riverside County. And then when we came all the way, 2,500 miles, all the way out to Virginia, then obviously we just started using it. And it just, all the college kids, they loved it. They just loved it. It was, it's not, like I tell everybody, it's not a book of answers. It's a book of questions. And so I always say, you're smarter than me. You now have access to God because you've accepted Christ and you have a Bible, and you and God can get together and find out awesome answers to these questions better than I can tell you. And so it's pretty straightforward. It's got a question and then the reference where they can look it up, or references where they can look up the answers, and they can do the research themselves. So it's the academic part of the discipleship project. You have to have that information. You know, we have to have information. We have to have knowledge. Let's face it. I don't know what you guys are going through, but people, Christians, do not know hardly anything about the Bible here in Tampa. It's unbelievable, you know, and I don't know if it's that way up in Virginia. It was kind of that way, I guess, while we were there, but you got great churches up there too. We've got mega churches. We've got big churches down here, but it's really the dumbing down of the believer has happened over the last many decades, and we're experiencing the result of that now.
Yeah, Dave, you mentioned one reason that the tool's effective, partly because it puts the responsibility on people to learn and grow and study the scriptures together. I've used the tools some in discipleship, and I think the question and discovery process is really important. What are some other reasons you think that that tool's been particularly effective?
Well, it's cross-cultural. It, like I said, I've got in Portuguese, French, people from, you know, Quebec, they've written me and said, can I translate your subject course into French? Yes, go ahead. Go ahead and do it. Over in, you know, like Spain and down in Mexico and Central America. And it's cross-cultural. I mean, all they do is just translate it. And then it's used all of these different places, you know, Korea, the Koreans, you know, are using now, I guess, and in English. And so it just works everywhere. It works everywhere. And that's the thing about part of the discipleship course. I don't know if the copies that you've seen, but we also made a model, a really tierce model for evangelism. And that turns out to be cross-cultural too. Mm-hmm. So I think everything we need to do, if we can, if it's possible, to make it transferable over to another culture, you know, so we don't have to like double dip, double work, you know what I mean? That type of thing.
Yeah, I think that is one of the values of it. And I think you don't know this, but we used it a lot, especially early on when we were first getting started at Pillar. And then it inspired us to create tools. You know, the creation of basic tools of discipleship. Mm-hmm. There's lots of ones that people can use. I think if there's someone listening today, you know, it's like there's a benefit to using other people's tools. There's also a benefit to being inspired to create transferable tools in your context that aren't just transferable cross-culturally, but to the newer person who's just getting involved discipling other people. They need good tools that they've learned on that they can utilize with people. We've got I did a 10 session Rhythms of a Growing Christian that people in our church use that really just help people begin to do the same thing, dig into God's word and really come to understand basic things of what it looks like to be a healthy Christian, what rhythms you'll have in your life, but also even a gospel one, like you were saying. We found my wife recently led two people to Christ using this just 4-part gospel study, sit down and go through the basics, help people discover the gospel for themselves. Mm-hmm. And those tools are so critical. The one that you've developed, I think because of its questions and simplicity, it makes it transferable, but it can have lots of depth as well at the same time.
Absolutely. You can go as deep, or you can just go as quickly or as deep. And I've seen people just write up those, just make all kinds of notes and everything in those books, and just incredible. And some of it were just middle school and high school kids. But this is the thing, Colby and Clint, and you guys know this, that everybody views the faith from their context. So they're always going to see something that they feel could be done, maybe just a little bit better or a little bit of improvement from the way that people have done it in the past. And they should have the freedom to be able to do that. If they feel that, hey, we need to follow a process that includes these components, or we need to do things this way or that way, because they have education, experience, and just the way that God has made them with their gifts and their spiritual gifts and their abilities, that they'll see something, a way of doing something in ministry that other people have not seen, and they need to make that happen.
That's great, guys. Thanks for mentioning those two tools specifically. The discipleship course that Dave just mentioned will be hung in the show notes, as well as the link where you can find Colby's Grow Your Faith course, the Rhythms of a Growing Christian thing he was mentioning, where you can find that over on Amazon. So thank you guys for mentioning those and having those tools when you're out doing the work of church planting. I mean, sometimes we say church planting so much, we forget that it's a farming analogy, like church planting. we're planting in these courses like this are, they feel very much like the tools we use, the hoes and the rakes and the shovels that we use to do the basic work. Without them, we're just sort of digging with our fingers. And so thank you guys for both investing time in creating those. And I pray that those would multiply many times over as people use them. So Colby, let's talk a little bit about, we've spent a lot of time in our ministry together talking about how powerful we've noticed it to be in a context where we have a lot of turnover. And Dave, you've worked in collegiate context a lot. tons of turnover. People are there for a semester, a few semesters, and they go home and they go around the world. They do internships, they do all kinds of stuff. And in our context in military, we're at a training Marine Corps base. And so we see people for very short periods of time, and then they're off to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And that short timeline that we have with them has actually created a sense of urgency in us that when we meet somebody, we feel like, man, we need to identify. We may not be able to help this person reach full maturity in the faith, but we can probably identify a particular destination, a way in which they could grow and overcome maybe a life-dominating sin or achieve some kind of spiritual goal that they would have, and to name a destination. So talk a little bit about how you have helped people to grow in their faith by landing on particular destinations, Colby.
Yeah, I think we use basically four different destinations to think about where people are at. One of them you've already mentioned, maturity issues. You know, when we see something going on in someone's life that's an obvious need for maturity, helping them work towards a place of maturity on a particular issue is a doorway into their general discipleship. So if I see somebody struggling, like you said, with a life-dominating sin, I want to help be involved in that, and I want to help disciple them in ways that will get them to a place where they're experiencing victory in that. So maturity is one of them. The other ones we use are a bit more on our missional pathway, which is first, we disciple people towards being a genuine member in the body. This is someone who doesn't understand the gospel, someone who's yet to really embrace the general mission we have together. We've got early tools for that. We want to help people form an identity, a destination of being a vibrant member of a body of Christ and the mission of Christ. And then we have what we call multiplier. This is someone who's able to pick up the basics of ministry within the church and to be doing those. And we want to assess where people at, what do they need to do? Because that next destination will really drive the kind of maturity. Because as Dave mentioned earlier, it's not just about information passing. We have to put a challenge in their life to begin to actively serve the Lord through impacting other people in their discipleship, because those challenges unlock humility along the way. And then we have beyond just sort of what we would call the multiplier destination. This is someone who can take the basics within our work together as a church and multiply the impact of it. Maybe lead a small group and begin to lead a ministry area or outreaches or something like that. We want to disciple them towards that. We want to also disciple people to be sent, the highest sort of level of leadership discipleship. So we've got, you know, tools we do with a missional leader cohort and a residency that are about training leaders to be able to take what we're doing to somewhere else and reproduce it. Each one of those destinations are unique, sort of the early stages, someone's maturity issues, their ability to act within the body that's already got momentum, and their ability to take that seed, go somewhere else and create momentum in the mission themselves. Those are unique skill sets, unique challenges, and unique ways we can really spur someone's discipleship on.
Yeah, that's so, I mean, it's so helpful to be able to think about like stops along the discipleship pathway, not stops, but sort of checkpoints along the discipleship pathway. But, you know, as we've talked about this, I think the level at which we talked about it started off around there, like how does the pathway work? But I noticed in the individual discipleship of particular people that sometimes, you know, it was even more granular than that. It could be more specific than that. Like Somebody had something specific they want. Let me say it another way. I think people are really motivated to grow when they can see a picture of what they're growing for or toward. The opposite is training and training and training, but never having a use for that training. And that's, I think, more in line with what we've seen happen in churches a lot. I mean, if you think about the average church, there's lots of training going on, and the sort of stated goal out there is so we would know the word better. But there's nothing particular that we plan to do with the word once we know it. So there's no motivating force to get us to work toward it. And so I've just noticed when something's in front of somebody, they want to overcome a sin, or they want to get on mission, or they have something particular in view, it becomes like fuel to help them, you know, see that learning as important and valuable and critical in what they do.
Yeah, one example of that might be, you know, like we see somebody who's got musical giftings in the life of the church, but there's kind of a lot going on there. There's some immaturities. We might go to them and say, hey, I really think you could be an incredible worship leader, and you seem to have the aspiration to be involved in music. I'd like to help you become a worship leader, but that means you're going to have to deepen your theological understanding. You're going to have to learn to overcome some of the things in your life that are holding you back. You're going to, and so that you can mature, you're going to have to learn to relate to other people well. And so we're going to need to spend some time together growing in the areas that are going to make you effective. And that person all of a sudden becomes extremely motivated to do those things.
Totally. Totally. Hey, Dave, let's pivot a little bit. How long should a person be in the process of discipleship, them as the disciple? How long should they be growing as a disciple before they take the big step toward discipling another person or seeking to win disciple somebody else?
Oh, I'm of the opinion that you know, the Second Timothy 2:2, whatever it is, you know, the things that you've heard of among me, among many witnesses, commit those of faithful men that they may be able to teach also others also. I believe you teach something to somebody and that person should go right out and find an audience. I mean, immediately.
I knew you were going to say that, but that's totally not the way most of us think about it, right? I mean, what do you've obviously been around the church a lot. You don't see that sort of eagerness at play.
No, mostly, we promote, right? We promote. I mean, look, what you and Colby are talking about, like the whole thematic thing of destination. Gosh, I love that, you know, and I want to do that, and I want to be better at that. I think it all just begins with just valuing people. That's the first step. And they're going to come in as not Christians, or they are Christians, or they've been Christians a long time, but they don't know anything and they've never really served, or they're really, you know, just experienced. I mean, I walked up to a lieutenant colonel the other day, first time I met him there at church, and he serves it in the Air Force at MacDill. And one of the first things I said to him, I said, tell me about your journey of faith. That's it. I mean, I just write off, you know. Right. And so I think we need to value people, and then we need to evaluate, value and evaluate, right? Mm-hmm. And then that's what Colby, that's what you were talking about. You were talking about trying to spot that area of sensitivity, that area of need, that area that we can begin to use as a jumping off point. And so if we value people, we see that there's things that they can do in their life that are going to be way better than what we could do. So this young lady she wants to go to Honduras, and she doesn't speak any Spanish. So we're going to focus in on her for the next whatever weeks and show her how to lead somebody to Christ in Spanish. And she's not too bad in Spanish. You know, she knows a little bit, you know, smart girl. And then everybody we see, this person has music background. Boy, they could work in the AV. This person, you know what I mean? Because they have all that special, unique ability with music and an ear for music and things, right? So but if we don't value people, we don't take our time, and we don't, like, if we don't just, like, view them, like, very, very carefully, then we're going to miss that area of sensitivity, or that area of need, or that jumping off place where we can begin with them.
Yeah, right. I think one of the things that's so powerful about what Dave is saying, and I remember this from past interactions with him, is that sense of belief in someone.
Right.
Like, so much of the lack of discipleship that happens in churches and from pastors is, I think there's this sense in which we get this idea that we've spent so much time learning to do all of this, nobody could ever get there. Nobody could ever think the way I do. But the truth is, when you value people where they're at and believe that God has put real gifts in them, you want to see those things unlocked. And it drives discipleship. I want to see what this guy's going to be like, what this girl's going to be like, if she grows in maturity, if he grows in maturity, how God might use that way beyond me. And just the joy of that really drives discipleship.
And they will surprise you.
Yeah.
And then when they get to that point where you're starting to see them become productive, then you tell them that they're productive. You let them know how the journey that they've gone through and how different they are now, and encourage them to even go further. It's such a beautiful experience, you know, such a beautiful, like, situation. And it happens all the time.
Yeah. Hey, Dave, right before we got on the recording, you were unpacking a text of scripture for me and Colby and how that affected you and your view of discipleship. Can you share what you were sharing with us? Because that was so good.
Yeah, so I'm blundering my way through doing an overview of the book of 1 Thessalonians, and I come to 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 2, a very random passage, and Paul says, "Hey, Thessalonians, you remember when I sent Timothy up to you, back up to you? I'm here. I decided to stay in Athens, and I wanted to send Timothy up." And then he says, "I wanted to send him up to you for two reasons." And this encapsulizes the entire discipleship process. And he uses two words. And so 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 2, they both begin with E. And the first is to establish you. I want to establish you. And the second one is I want to encourage you. And the word for establish is the Greek word sterizo. It's the word where we get our English word steroids from. So Paul says, the first thing I'm sending Timothy to you for, the first reason, is because I want you to become people that receive spiritual steroids. I want you to become strong. I want you to become strong in the faith. And then the second thing, he uses the word encourage. And like I said, there's a couple of words for encourage. I like them both. Parakaleo and noutheteo. Noutheteo is more of a counseling term. Parakaleo is a counseling, encouraging, helping, assisting. And he uses the word parakaleo and says, and I'm going to send Timothy to encourage you to come alongside of you and just to benefit you and to make you feel secure and to mentor you and to eat with you and take walks with you and minister and talk to people about God with you and find out, you know, where you're at and how we can benefit you and move you along and improve you within your walk with God. So it's the two E's. It was so great. It was hidden right there in 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 2, the encouraging and the establishing, and that pretty much sums up what we should be doing in discipleship,
I think. Yeah, that's incredible. Colby, you've got the task pastoring a particular church, you know, you're not just thinking about discipling one believer at a time. You're actually thinking about how to motivate, encourage, equip, prepare, inspire an entire group of more mature disciples to reach beyond the scope of the church even and into the fringes of the church, those who are not yet mature in their faith. How does this conversation shift for somebody who's just thinking about, I'm a Christian who's trying to disciple another person, from I'm a pastor who has the responsibility of pastoring people to disciple other people?
Yeah, I think it's the difference between being a player in the game and a coach. Now I think the reality is there's a lot of pastors who know how to disciple someone themselves, although sometimes we even discover that that's not the case, that they would be intimidated in their own ability to disciple individuals. But on a broader scale, we have to learn to not just do the work ourselves of ministry, of seeing people grow and be transformed, but to train and prepare others to be able to do it, to believe they can do it, and to employ them in the actual activity, expect them to act. And because that's really where people grow the most. You know, they get out of their comfort zone and they've got to look someone in the eye who's going through something real difficult and be their strength and encourager. And they feel out of their depths. There's nothing more powerful than feeling out of your depths. And so we have to push people. I've always... my natural bent has always been to challenge people beyond what they're comfortable doing, because I think there's just something powerful about somebody being able to accomplish something they never thought they could do. And right. And I want to do that all the time in the life of the church. The other thing that I think is important for us as pastors to think about is that nothing we do in ministry is a throwaway. It's not just a part of a system. It's not just a, you know, a logistical thing. Every aspect of the life of the church has a discipleship opportunity buried in it. And so that has to do with how we see people serving, how we think about the membership process. All of these things are discipleship, and we should think about them with a discipleship eye and be aiming for something that's really shaping in the life of people, so that all throughout the church, we're helping people realize the way that you as a leader of the setup team help disciple people is you don't just do the setup work, you do it with joy. You help them understand what it looks like really to serve Christ with joy. You teach them all along the way. We're to be teachers all along the way, no matter what we're doing in the life of the church. And we have to create a culture in the church that really embraces that.
Wow. That's awesome. One of the great things about being a podcast host is I get to talk about things I want to talk about with the people who I feel like have the absolute best grasp on this. So being able to spend 25 minutes talking to the two of you about discipleship is a gift. And I hope other people have enjoyed it as much as I have. Thank you, man, for being a part of this.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.